Welcome to the Mind on My Money podcast presented by Pinnacle Trust, hosted by RebelGrove.com publisher Neil McCready and Pinnacle Trust financial guru Martin Palomo. The Mind on My Money podcast tackles the financial questions we're all thinking about, from paying for college to saving for retirement, from life insurance needs to 401ks and everything in between. The goal is to help you take the stress out of financial concerns and give you some tips to enjoy life while your mind is on your money. Now here are your hosts, Neil McCready and Martin Palomo.
Welcome to another edition of Mind on My Money, presented by Pinnacle. I'm Neil McCready, Martin Palomo with me here today as well. It is Thursday, January the 13th. Hope you're having a good week. Thank you for making us a part of your week. We appreciate it. I'll tell you real quick, I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford, excuse me, I had an itch, is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Just call the number, ask for Corey Clark. Get a quote on a Ford product you're looking for. If you just need a little car buying advice in this weird car buying market, all the markets are weird, Corey will give you that as well. He's wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy. He'll prove that to you when you make the call. 662-257-1900. Martin, good day. Welcome into the show. And before we get rolling, tell the people about what's going on at Pinnacle and how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, man. good to be back. I know it was just a week ago when we've talked, and it feels like I've been all over the world and back again in the week since we talked, man. And lots of things going on here, you know. And we are we're excited for the new year for Pinnacle. It kind of represents a bunch of new things for us. We have successfully transitioned. We have one account that you know, that is kind of being a straggler that has a little bit more legal stuff to do with than anything else. So we are, for all intents and purposes, on our way with new technologies, new custodian. Man, I'm really looking forward to being back to just working with clients and not having to worry about transitioning a business too. So, you know, I know it's kind of been a little bit of a choppy January, it's kind of yo-yo, man. It's like, markets go down, markets go up. Some of them are kind of dislocated from each other. If you're looking at the Dow versus the S&P, and that might create confusion for some folks. But you know, one of the things we try to focus on, which I've said time and time again, is that you know, if you get a plan in place and you stick with a plan, you don't have to worry so much about kind of the day-to-day yo-yos of the market. We generally try to underestimate what returns are going to be year in and year out. Overestimate what our client expenses are going to be in a planning situation, so that you know, that we kind of have a what I call like a doomsday scenario for planning. And if it works in a worst case scenario, then whenever normal happens, whatever normal is, folks can have some confidence that they're going to be okay. Or if we get to it and we look and go, hey, we got some things to address, we can talk about it head on and not, put our head in the sand and hope and pretend that it goes away, because it generally doesn't. If it's an issue now and you don't fix it, it's going to be an issue later. So, man, that's if folks are curious about that, or you don't have a plan and you're wanting to talk to someone about it, we might be a good fit. we're a good fit for a lot of folks. Some folks we're not a good fit for, and that's okay too. I can tell folks, hey, doesn't make sense for what you're trying to do, or for what we do, it doesn't make sense for you. And I'll be honest with folks about that. I don't want to piss people off and give bad service and because it's not a good fit. But anyway, I just kind of rambled on, which I kind of do a little bit sometimes. But if you don't have a plan, you're looking for one, or you're not sure if you have a plan, if you have came into some funds that you weren't expecting, a lot of folks retire at year end and then don't know what to do with what they have. Those are good opportunities to talk to an advisor, and we'd love to be on your short list. You can call us at 601-957-0323 or email at info@mypinwealth.com. And one of our team members will reach out. We work in teams here. So it's not a every man for himself, here. We work in teams to help clients with continuity as well. So anyway, again, 601-957-0323.
All right, so kind of touch on a number of things. I think today is an interesting day. It's one of those days that you're almost not reluctant to do a podcast, but you almost kind of hate that you can't control a little bit better when you do it, because there's today's the day that the Supreme Court is supposed to issue multiple rulings on different cases, perhaps on the mandate issue that they heard a week ago. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. So it's one of those things where by the time this podcast goes up, it might even be outdated. If that happens, we apologize. But it's 10:30 in the morning, is Central Time, as we tape this on Thursday the 13th, for your perspective. Boy, there's a lot of places I could go, or I'm trying not to go super political right off the top, because I tend to, once we go there, I can't get back. So I'll start with this. We talk a lot about inflation here on the show. We've been doing this. We started the show right around the time that the pandemic actually began, and
we did. Great timing for us.
Yeah, I was like, well, what do we talk about every week? That's not a problem. This is from the Wall Street Journal. We do this a lot for people who are just jumping in for the first time. This is Thomas Gritta, Wall Street Journal. He writes, in the hierarchy of business threats confronting corporate leaders in 2022, COVID-19 still rules, but inflation has quickly closed the gap. Concerns about rising prices skyrocketed in the past year, according to a survey of more than 900 global CEOs conducted by the Conference Board, a business research group. More than half of the CEOs expect price pressures to persist until at least mid-2023, after having registered as a low-level worry in the year-ago survey. Inflation is here, Honeywell International Incorporated Chief Executive Officer Darius Adamczyk said in an interview. We have to be very, very careful how it gets solved, too, because it's a little bit like driving your vehicle. If you slam on the brakes too hard, we could see the other side of inflation, which is a recession. Business leaders have been warning about inflation risk in the past year, even as Federal Reserve officials and most economists largely played down the breadth and persistence of rising prices. And they did that for political reasons. On Wednesday, the U.S. Labor Department reported that inflation finished 2021 at its highest level since 1982. With the consumer price index up 7% in December versus a year ago, compared with 6.8% in November. Last paragraph, Martin, before I hand it to you. How large the COVID-19 related disruptions loom for global executives varies by geography, the survey found. U.S. chief executives cited labor shortages as their chief external concern for the coming year, followed by inflation and supply chain problems. COVID-19 came in fourth.
Well, that's good that COVID is number four. Yeah, and I think when we first started talking about inflation, I was in the camp with the Fed, because it just made sense that inflation would be, you know, the term that they use is transitory, or for, you know, the everyday person, let's just call it temporary, like not going to persist long term. And, you know, as the supply chain issues continued on, so like, well, let me pause and stop. So like just basic, you know, economics principles is, you know, that prices, you know, fluctuate and ebb and flow with the amount of supply in the markets and then demand for the product, which kind of makes sense, right? So, you know, hypothetically speaking, let's say that I have, you know, an apple and I mean the fruit apple, not the machine or tech stuff apple. And, you know, and there's been a, you know, a severe freeze and there's not a ton of apples that are available, you know, in the markets. A lot of the apples were killed by the weather. And for whatever reason, there's a, let's just say the demand is just normal for, you know, in any year, there's not more demand for the apple. But because I have something that there's not a lot of, you know, I'm going to say, well, this apple is worth more now because there's not a lot of supply of apples because of a freeze. So I'm going to raise the price of this apple because it's scarce and people will pay it. And generally speaking, that is true. you know, now let's say that next spring, you know, there's no freezes and the apple production is normal. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's plenty of apples to be sold. You know, I'm not going to be able to fetch a higher price for my apple than normal. And so that's kind of what I envisioned was going to happen at the onset of this. So yes, we had some inflation because there was issues of getting the supply of goods, you know, into the U.S. You know, COVID did disrupt those chains. And then labor really was the big disruptor of it. So, you know, I kind of thought those things would work themselves out, you know, in a year, and they just haven't, man. You know, we still have really more of the labor issue of getting the quote unquote apples into the, you know, into the market and into the U.S., you know, because there are container ships sitting in docks waiting to be unloaded. And there's not the manpower to do that. And I know we talked on the last show or show before about, you know, truck drivers and getting, once the apples are on land, you know, in Los Angeles or, you know, Huntington Beach or wherever, you know, how do they get to the, you know, to Jackson, Mississippi or to Oxford, Mississippi? And that's kind of the big disruptor that's really, I think, driven a lot of inflation is that there is the supply hasn't come back yet. But if you look through the inflation numbers too, you know, a lot of the inflation number is used car prices. It's rents as well, which we've talked about this whole, you know, scenario in a show or two ago where, you know, inflation feels different for different people. But it is here, you know. And another piece of it that I don't know that we've really talked about, but it does persist, is that there was so much money pumped into our systems, you know, when they were shooting paychecks out of cannons with the stimulus money and then the moratorium on evictions. You know, the general public had more money than they normally do. And that's evident in the M2 money supply charts that the Fed Bank in St. Louis puts out. And when you have more money to do things, that's inherently inflationary, because the demand for, you know, if I've got an extra $100 that I didn't have yesterday and I get to spend it, I'm going to go spend it. You know, I might buy shoes. I might buy, you know, I don't know, something that I don't necessarily need. So there, it creates some demand for products that we've already stated are short in supply. So it was kind of almost a perfect scenario to have inflation. You know, I know energy prices like gasoline is up significantly. I mean, this time last year, I think gas was like $1.50-ish in Mississippi, you know, a gallon. Now it's $3. So that's real, right?
Sure.
You know, but my mortgage, and which is, this is the crazy part, is, you know, 2 years ago, my mortgage was like 4.5%. I refinanced before everything went, rates started rising again. Cause I knew, like, hey, I need to, the game is over and, the rates are about to start going up. So I locked in and refinanced, and, you know, my rate went down by 33%. So my mortgage payment didn't go down by 33%, unfortunately, but it did go down by like 15%, dude. And that's real. So I experienced a reduction of costs, you know, my mortgage. But if I was renting, you know, especially with the moratorium, expiring, you know, I probably had a different experience if I'm a renter. You know, my rent was $1,000 and now my rent is, you know, $1,100 a month. And that's, you know, it's different. It is different for different folks. You know, and if you live in, you know, let's just say Washington, D.C., and you own your home, you've owned your home, you take the metro or the subway or the buses everywhere, you know, it may be that the only impact you're feeling is in the grocery store.
I was going to say, I think one of the reasons that a lot of the media downplay this is because they live in places where their lifestyle hasn't been affected.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, if you're a, I don't know how much the talking heads on, you know, TV make. I really don't. Let's just pretend that they
national
make,
or local.
Because
the local
national.
The local don't make anything. The national people are incredibly well paid.
So you like more than $250,000 a year
at a network? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's just say they make $250,000 for easy argument, right?
Sure.
So you take someone who makes $250,000 bucks, and let's just say after, you know, taxes and everything that's said, you know, said and done, they have, you know, I don't know, let's just say they have $2,000 a month, you know, that's kind of left over, right? That's their savings. So if their grocery bill goes up from, you know, $100 a week to, you know, $110 a week, so a 10% increase, they probably don't really feel that, right? But, you know, a family, like when I first started working in this industry, I made really, really good money for the time. But I made $50,000 a year, and I didn't have money left over at the end of the month. And so if my grocery bill went up, you know, $40 a month, that was real. Like, I was having to find that $40 from somewhere else, or do what I had to do, you know, when I moved back to Mississippi and I was a, you know, freshly divorced single dad with two kids. I had to go moonlight. I had to go pick up a second job, and, you know, and I waited tables, you know, several nights a week to make ends meet for a couple of years until I could kind of get my feet underneath me. So, you know, people who are families who are, you know, really the low middle class that don't qualify for any type of government assistance, they're the ones that get smoked the hardest in this type of scenario where, you know, gasoline is now two times, you know, you're paying double what you paid a year ago. You know, at the grocery store, you're paying, you know, 10% or 15% more than you did, you know, a year ago. And if you're renting, you know, you're paying, I don't know, I'm just going to say 10%. I don't know what that number is, but yeah, it's real to the lower middle class. It kills the lower middle class. The folks who are on, you know, government assistance, I can't really speak to does it hurt them or not, because I don't know enough about government assistance to know if they get, you know, an inflation increase like Social Security does. I don't know if that's real for government assistance folks. And then for folks who are making the talking heads that are making, you know, $250,000 or more, you know, I don't know that they really feel it like, you know, like the single dad or the single mom that's making $50,000 and trying to make everything work on $50,000, you know. So it's different for different folks. And I know I've beat that horse before, but it's worth talking about.
No,
I think the media does try to scare.
Well, the media absolutely tries to scare. Scare brings ratings. And then you have, look, we're at a stage in this from a media standpoint where, and it's all about COVID. Telling the truth about COVID requires that you basically admit that you knowingly lied for the better part of 2 years. And that's a hard thing for people to do. It's human nature is to double down on the lie. Yep. And then triple down on the lie, and then lie so much that you become convinced that you never lied in the first place. And that's where we are with media and COVID-19. And it's impacting things like, it is the reason we have inflation. It's the reason that there's a shortage of goods on the shelves. When you go to Walmart or Kroger or wherever you go, you see it there.
Yeah, I've really seen it in orange juice. That's where I've seen it the most. And I didn't really realize it until, you know, I've been... Because the orange juice at my grocery store is right by the milk, and I'm constantly getting milk because my kids just well, I shouldn't say my kids. My home, except for my wife, consumes milk like it's water. And I started noticing about 2 months ago that if you want orange juice, it's pretty tough to find, because at least Kroger and Jackson does not have orange juice. So.
Well,
but we don't drink a ton of orange juice. So
we've got a. That's why we're all watching, kind of on bated breath about this mandate thing. If the mandates are upheld universally, I think you're going to see a truck driver shortage. And if you see a truck driver shortage, you see a goods not getting to the shelves shortage, correct, which leads to higher prices because there's more demand. And then, yep, you hear people go, "Hey, well, maybe we can talk these people into lowering their prices." And that's, you don't get how this works, do you? And right, that's where we do have a fundamental crisis of almost education, Martin, because there's so many people who are making decisions who are bureaucrats, and they've never worked in the business world in their lives.
Right. And I mean, and you do get to a point with prices, and let's just use milk. And I know we joked that milk is Kroger's loss leader because it never changes in price. But let's just say, you know, you go to Kroger right now, you buy a gallon of milk for somewhere between $3.29 and $3.79 a gallon. It's somewhere in there. I can't remember what it is. But you go to the grocery store the next day or the next week, and milk is now $7 a gallon. You start to make choices. You say, okay, you know, do I get this gallon of milk and water it down to stretch it? Or is now milk so expensive that, you know, that I just forego the milk and we just have, you know, water that's coming out of the tap? And until prices hit that point of where people start making substitute decisions for milk, it'll keep rising if we have a supply shortage. And then it'll eventually come back down and supply will come back in and everything will settle out and people start buying milk again. But that's how the price adjustments happen, is it'll start to get to the point to where people will make substitute decisions, and they'll say, I'm not getting milk this time. Or you go home and, you know, when you're fixing your kid's cereal in the morning, you do a half thing of milk and then half thing of water, and the kids complain, but it is what it is, right?
Absolutely. It's why I get furious at the people who downplay it. I really do. It bothers me. It really bothers me when people just downplay it. Like it's, oh, well, you know, whatever. Just going to cost more. You can't get certain things. All because of just the insanity of it all.
Yeah, literally, it really is a domino effect, man.
Literally, today we have the president of the United States today, Martin, calling for censorship. The president of the United States of America calling for censorship.
You're going to have to tell me a little more, because
he gave a speech today in which he also urged news outlets to get misinformation under control. They're very worked up about Joe Rogan. So my thing is
all right. So I'm sorry, dude. I'm totally ignorant to.
Are you aware who Joe Rogan is?
What happened with Joe Rogan?
Are you aware who he is?
Yeah, I know. I know who Joe Rogan is.
I mean, some people don't. Well, he's had several medical doctors on who have not played along with the mass media narrative. And again, part of what made our society great was that there was a marketplace of ideas. There was a marketplace of ideas, and you had the ability to hear different people express different thoughts on controversial topics and decide for yourself. You had the ability to decide for yourself, and they're taking that away now. They don't want that now. Now they want to silence anyone who happens to have a contrary opinion. And it's not healthy, and most importantly, it's not what we were founded on.
Right. I think we tossed tea into a harbor about this.
Absolutely we did.
So So yeah, I wasn't aware of what was going on Joe Rogan.
Yeah, they're trying to. And they're not calling him out specifically, but Joe Rogan's getting numbers that are terrifying other people, and so they're saying, "Well, he's passing out misinformation."
Well, so like, what do you know what he's saying?
Yeah, I've listened to all of them. It's 3-hour podcast. It's almost impossible to put them into encapsulated form, but essentially that a lot of talk about myocarditis with young people, that the vaccines aren't preventing spread. And again, I'm vaccinated.
Right. Well, and I think that we're seeing that with urging, almost everyone that I know that's had the new variant were vaccinated.
They're urging a certain degree of caution as it pertains to boosters. And really urging young people to be very careful about vaccines. Giving numbers, and you know, the numbers will scare you. But the point is not whether Rogan's right or wrong. To me, the point is not about the accuracy of Joe Rogan's guess. To me, is the president of the United States calling for censorship?
Yeah.
Why? On one hand, you mandate a vaccine, and on the other hand, you're not going to let people talk about it? Whoa. Really bugs me. Look, I got a real hot take on COVID-19. COVID-19's over when we stop testing for it. Speaking of, Joe Biden saying the U.S. will procure 500 million more COVID-19 tests. Send military medical teams to hospitals to meet demand around the country, doubling the number of tests the U.S. plans to send to the public free of charge. That means 1 billion tests in total to meet future demand, Biden said. He added that he plans next week to detail a plan to provide free masks to Americans. The president said last month the U.S. would procure an initial batch of 500 million tests to distribute free. He's doubling that number amid what public health officials say is a growing need for more accessible testing as a result of the Omicron variant. They've begun completing contracts for the initial round of 500 million rapid tests, which will be mailed to people who request them through a website and phone hotline starting in the coming weeks. At least we're creating some jobs. Biden said the website would be rolled out next week. The White House hasn't said how many tests people can request. Yeah, my hope that we just stop testing and let it just go is never going to come to fruition. So what we've got now is every time someone's got a cold, they run to the doctor to get tested.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's just testing. I should shut up. let's see. Supermarkets cut hours services as Omicron infects workers. That's a headline today.
Yeah, and I think let's kind of talk about that for a minute too, because let's talk about the economy, how that impacts economy and really productivity is really I think what we'll hammer in on. There, and so the CDC guideline of the 5-day part, I think really helps businesses in that regard. But it does seem, and this is just observations, this is not me backing up anything with facts or data, this is observations. So I've tried to take Bella's favorite little place to get food when I pick her up from her show choir practice at like 8:30 at night. She's always starving and she's like, hey, can we go to Moe's and get run me by there. Let me grab a burrito. And that's kind of, it's a time for us to, kind of catch up on the day. Jennifer and Gia are not going to wait till 9 o'clock to eat dinner. I get that. So I don't force that in my house, but I want to have that opportunity with Bella. And that we usually, a lot of times we get that opportunity, but here recently in like the last 2 weeks, they've been shut down at, when we get there, and they're not saying that they're closed for good, but they just don't have the staff to you know, to keep it open till 8:39. And I realize like not a lot of people are getting dinner at 9 o'clock. They probably keep it during peak hours, but you know, there's a lot of folks that, you know, they don't have normal hours. And if they're, you know, if places are shut down, I've seen a lot of it with, there's been a lot more complaining about it, you know, in the forums and whatnot on Facebook and Nextdoor and all that stuff. But, you know, the services that people are kind of accustomed to are really getting, you know, really getting crunched by this variant, and the policy still in place of, you know, hey, you come into, you're unvaccinated, come into close contact, you got to quarantine for whatever, 5 days. You know, and, but the thing that I kind of trips me out a little bit is if you're vaccinated and you come into close contact with someone that's, you know, positive, you don't have to quarantine, but everyone that I know that's had this, you know, this variant, you know, since December, 100% of the people that I know that are, you know, sick, and I'll say sick with kind of air quotes because they have mild symptoms or symptoms for a day and then they're good, they're all vaccinated. All of them. And so I don't know that being vaccinated or wearing masks is going to solve the labor issue either. So, you know, they say, go get boosted, go get vaccinated. People are still getting the breakthrough stuff, but it's service hours are being chopped back because, you know, there's not, someone's positive, so they can't come to work, and, or someone's been exposed to someone, and so they can't come to work. And, you know, all of these, life is being disrupted again now, not shut down like it was, you know, in March of 2020, but we are losing a lot of productivity, you know, to this quote unquote, you know, to this new variant. But the new variant is busting through all of the protective barriers that were set up to keep, you know, keep us going as a society. You know, and I think a lot of people who, like you said, you know, you get a little sniffle, sneezing, and, you know, your boss is like, you know, are you sick? Well, you know, no, I've got a little congestion. Go get tested. And lo and behold, people, and I guess they're spreaders, but I think that's what's going to have to happen too, is this thing's just got to go through. It's going to burn out. It's got to go through the population. And I don't know, hopefully maybe that point we're back to normal where people have some antibodies and we can rock and roll. And if it continues to mutate and get less and less severe, then we just, it's something we live with.
A little breaking news, Martin. Mortgage rates jumped to highest level since March of 2020. This is all from the Wall Street Journal this morning, 10:48 a.m. This story was published by Orla McCaffrey. Mortgage rates have hit their highest levels since March 2020, the month the coronavirus pandemic took hold in the U.S. and world markets. The average rate for a 30-year fixed rate loan was 3.45% for the week ending Thursday. Mortgage finance giant Freddie Mac reported, up from 3.22% a week ago. That's a pretty decent jump, 3.22 to 3.45. Expectations that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates multiple times this year are driving up interest rates, which are closely tied to the 10-year U.S. Treasury. Rates have now risen for three straight weeks. A year ago, the rate on America's most popular home loan was 2.79%, just above its record low of 2.65. Still, rates remain near historic lows. Higher borrowing costs combined with record high home prices could push some would-be buyers out of the market. The median price for existing homes rose 13.9% in November from a year earlier to $353,900, according to the National Association of Realtors. Given the fast pace of home price growth, higher rates will likely dampen demand in the near future, Sam Cater, chief economist at Freddie Mac, said in a statement. Last paragraph here, mortgage payments are already less affordable relative to income than at any time since 2008, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. In early 2021, Americans needed about 29% of their income to cover a mortgage payment on a medium-priced home. The Atlanta Fed estimated that rose to 33% by October.
I mean, dude.
Hey, Martin, I'm going to hit the pause button real quick. Hold on.
Yes, sir.
Sorry about that. We had to hit a pause button. I had to take a phone call, family-related thing. Apologize, Martin, for interrupting you. Continue on.
You're good. Yeah, no, I mean, and the thing with the mortgage rates being at historical lows and your payments changing, and what has happened, if you've bought a new home, you know, in the last several years, you've paid more in value for the home, but your financing costs were less versus, you know, a several years back, you would have paid, you know, let's just say a 4.5% to 5%, you know, interest rate on your mortgage. But you paid less for your house. So I'm not saying that everything is like, you know, ceteris paribus, you know, equal, but, you know, if you already owned your home, right, let's say you bought in 2017, like I did, and this was pre, COVID and all that stuff. And, you know, you still had a good mortgage rate. But, you know, COVID happens, mortgage rates drop to historical lows, you know, and then you refinance. Well, you didn't buy a new house. So you didn't feel the impact of, you know, the higher housing costs, but you did get to drop your, you know, your payment pretty significantly. I mean, if you were at even at 4.25 or 4.75 and you go down to 3.75, a whole point, you know, will, and that's a 25% reduction in, you know, the interest rate, but, you know, it's not dollar for dollar. You don't get a 25% reduction on your payment, just the interest portion of the payment, but it probably drops your payment by, you know, 10-15%, which is pretty significant when you have, if you have a, you know, let's say you have a $1,800 or, let's go easy math, $2,000 a month, you know, mortgage payment, and, you know, you drop it by $300, that's pretty significant, man. I mean, that's real money. That's $300 you get to do something different with. So, you know, I know not everything equals out, but I do think that the rising rates will kind of check the, you know, the price of homes. And if you haven't refinanced and you still have a, you know, an old rate, I mean, you need to go do that today. Today. Well, as you said, it may be not too, it's not too late, but you missed the lows, but it's still low.
Yeah, when it was really low, we talked about doing it just for the hell of it because it was so low, but, you know, you hated to do, I don't know, we stuck with it. And ours is low, but
yeah.
Yeah, no, there was a window there.
You have to balance out closing costs and all that stuff.
Sure, sure, because it takes about, takes several months before that all balances out, yeah.
Yep.
All right, we're going to stop there. I've got an issue I've got to go deal with. We still got almost 40 minutes in for you guys. We'll be back next week with another edition of Mind on My Money presented by Pinnacle. Don't forget, it's mypinwealth.com, mypinwealth.com. Please remember that my views, which sometimes come out in very frustrated fashion because I'm really frustrated, those should not be held against Pinnacle, although... although
that.
there are some times I think that Martin probably agrees with me, but there are times that he doesn't, so that's okay too.
But that is all right too.
Here's the deal: regardless of your views on anything, you want to make sure that a professional is handling your retirement plans. There's few things more precious than that, and the people at Pinnacle do incredible work. They sit down with you and they study your specific situation, your specific goals, because as I say all the time, people have different retirement desires. Some people want, and this is not a judgment one way or the other, because I think I'm kind of one of these people. Some people want a very simple retirement, and some people want to do a lot of extravagant things at retirement, and there are different price tags for those things, obviously. Neither one's right or wrong or good or bad or better than the other, but there are different price tags for different retirement dreams and hopes and aspirations, and the people at Pinnacle will sit down with you and make sure that you are proceeding along with a plan that is going to best enable you to achieve those dreams. So that's why you should sit down with them, and they're very, very good at it. So it's mypinwealth.com, M-Y-P-I-N-N-Wealth.com. nnwealth.com. For Martin Palomo, I'm Neil McCready. We will talk to you again next week. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. Talk to you soon.